what we've been talking about for the last few weeks to catch you up if you either haven't been in here or you use this half hour to get some physical rest, not spiritual rest, which is fine. You know, I'm not judging you, but let's catch you up. We've been looking at the identity statements of God. God reveals himself, self-reveals to Moses at the burning bush. Famous moment, I want you to help lead my people out of Egyptian slavery. And Moses is grumpy about it. And then he says, well, who am I supposed to say sent me? And the revelation of God is, tell them I am sent you. Right? The name is I am. That's God's name that he tells Moses. Which is, in some ways, completely unhelpful, right? I am sent you. What? I mean, some translations say, I will be who I will be. It's literally God saying, don't label me. You want to know who sent you? Don't label me. I am presence itself. Moses was not just terrified at the bush. He was terrified at the name of God. I am. The word for being is what God names himself. So in one way, God says, I am revealing that I am bigger and over and in all things. I am the very definition of presence. But in another way, it's so incredibly unknowable. I am, period. So the Greek word for that is ego eimi, okay? I am, the state of being, all right? And so in our Bible that's all Greek, it's called the Septuagint, the earliest version we have where they actually translated the Hebrew into Greek. It's ego eimi, all right? That's important because when Jesus comes onto the scene, Jesus begins to use the same statement and phrase that God uses to reveal himself to Moses. I am, ego eimi. But here's the difference. Instead of just putting the punctuation at the end, which he does once to be quite clear that Jesus is God, he follows it up by saying, I am, and then offers descriptors. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the bread of life. I am living water. We kind of worked that in from the back door. That's what he was saying. He didn't use that specific phrase. I am the vine. And all of a sudden, Jesus actually chooses to both identify with the Father, but clarify the nature of God. And so that's why these I am statements are so important. Not just because Jesus is linking himself with God, but because he's actually clarifying and helping us understand the nature of God in a new way. And that's what Jesus is. That's what Jesus does. I am the gate. I am the truth. I am the shepherd. These statements describe and clarify an unknowable God, which is the job of Jesus. To clarify the nature of God. Because if we don't have something to clarify the nature of God, I hate to say this, I don't want you to take it the wrong way. But if we just decide, okay, this is going to be the nature of God, do you know how much information is here that can be abused to clarify the nature of God? Jesus comes in and he helps us understand where our starting point is so that we might rightly understand everything else. So, it's beautiful, it's challenging, but it's what Jesus came to do, to reveal the Father's heart and to shape us in the Father's world. So, what's today's revelation? Let's take a look, because we've been through a bunch. So this is the last week for a while. We'll come back in December to look at four more statements during the season of Advent. But so Jesus is working with his disciples. He's in the middle of a long dialogue during the final weekend of his physical life before he is crucified, okay? And so they've just shared in the upper room. And they've gone out from there. And here's what Jesus says in John 15. And if you've been around church for a while, you're going to recognize this. Jesus says to his disciples, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you're like a branch that's thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. Okay, So Jesus decides, as he's done in the past, to pick an image that is kind of familiar with an agricultural and agrarian society, right? Except this one is special, because between the time that Jesus leaves the upper room with his disciples, which is on kind of the southwest side of the city, and he is working his way to the Garden of Gethsemane, the words before this section are, "Come, let us go." Okay? So he finishes his time in the upper room, he says, "Let's go." And then we get all this dialogue that we can maybe assume is on the way to the garden. Now, on the way to the garden, as you pass along throughout the edge of the Kidron Valley, we have a lot of talking, so you can imagine we're winding our way through the city, you have to go in front of the temple. Now, there was something very unique that was at the entrance of the temple gate, all right? That the doorway to the temple, when you would walk by it, if you would look up, you would see a beautiful golden vine trained over the entrance doors to the temple with huge clusters of grapes, all made of solid gold, hanging from them. We know this because of Josephus's work, as well as many others. Herod built the temple. We know that people would donate whatever they had, whatever gold they might have that they've gotten over the years, they would donate it to the temple, and it would be formed, if it wasn't yet, into grape clusters, and it would be added to this door. It was incredibly, incredibly ornate. This is the best depiction we have. I don't know if there's little angels or whatever the people are. It's a horrible picture, but we don't actually have any pictures of it. So this is the idea of what we're talking about, this grapevine around and atop. Why on earth would it be there? But also, was Jesus speaking of this as he walks by? Because Jesus loved images and word plays and metaphors that were all about real life and what was right in front of you, right? He turns lessons into fig trees into lessons. He turns temple taxes into lessons. And we might wonder if he was walking by this and looks at the vine and he says, "You know what? Use the word true. I'm the true vine." So he must be looking at a vine that's not the true vine, or at least thinking about a vine that's not the true vine. But why were vines so important, and why was it on the temple? Well, the vine, the vine was incredibly important to understand as an image for Israel and for the rescue of God. So in Psalm 80, this is why that vine is up on top of the temple door. Sorry. In Psalm 80, we read, "You transplanted a vine from Egypt. You drove out the nations and you planted it. You cleared the ground for it and it took root and filled the land." Notice that it took root. That's really, really important with vine making or vine growing. "The mountains were covered in its shade, the mighty cedars with its branches." The cedars were covered. I'm so sorry. Got something in my throat. The cedars were covered in the branches of a vine. You catch that? Cedars, giant trees. You get this image? There's a grapevine that's covering the branches of the cedars. That's how big and beautiful and glorious it is. So this was the image of Israel. The transplanted vine that God took from Egypt. Israel was the people of God, or was the vine. He planted it in this promised land that he said, "I'm going to bring you to one day." It was the fulfillment of everything that they longed for. All right? The vine was the fulfillment. It represented that. "Its branches reaches as far as the sea. Its shoots as far as the river." God takes and plants the vine. Okay? And now the vine was not always yielding the fruit that it was supposed to yield, however. So in Isaiah 5, it comes back again. "I will sing for the one I love, a song about his vineyard. My loved one had a vineyard on a fertile hillside. He dug it up and cleared it of stones." Once again, we get this imagery of planting a vineyard and carefully tending and getting it ready. "He built a watchtower in it and he cut a wine press as well. Then he looked for a crop of good grapes, but it yielded only bad fruit." So apparently Israel hasn't always given good fruit, even though God plants the vine. Thank you so much, Ken. In verse 7, we fast forward. That's perfect, yeah? Yeah. In verse 7, we fast forward. "The vineyard of the Lord Almighty is the nation of Israel." So we don't have to I'm not wrong here. This isn't theory. It's really overt. "Is the nation of Israel, and the people of Judah are the vines he delighted in." What you can't see because of the guitar. "And he looked for justice, but saw bloodshed. for righteousness, but he heard cries of distress. So what we understand is that the vineyard and the vine is about Israel and who they are. It's about the faithfulness of God in taking them from a land of slavery to a promised land, but they haven't always been good at actually yielding good fruit, okay? So there's been some problems somewhere along the way with the vine, with the nation of Israel, with what God was supposed to have promised. But the reason that the vine was so important was because of the way that vines grow, okay? Every Jewish courtyard in Israel had two things planted in it. The buildings were made like a square. So the building's like a square, and in the middle of it is open. So here's the building, and in the middle is like an open little courtyard. And in that courtyard is, I could have drawn that, is two things, a fig plant and a vine. And the reason, we're not going to get into the fig today, I've talked about it before, but the reason that you planted the vine was because when you plant a vine, what you say is, we are here to stay. You know why? Because it takes a long, long time to get good fruit. So when you plant a vine, the first thing that you do is you make sure that it has a good roots and it's securely planted, but it doesn't look like much. And in the first year, it starts to grow up a little bit and the branches start to spread out. And as soon as that happens, you chop off everything except the vine itself. Every branch down to little millimeters, barely anything going. And for those of you who know how to prune fruit trees or bushes, berry bushes, you understand this process quite well because it looks like you're destroying the thing. Looks like you're just mowing it down, but actually what's happening is a process that's called abiding, the same word that we translate as remain in this scripture passage. It's an agricultural term. And so when the plant would abide, there was all of this energy that was being stored up. There was all of this purpose in the waiting. And when the time would come for the second year for the plant to grow, you would let it sprout and it would have all of this energy coming and then you'd chop it all again. 2 years. Third growing season, it would come up and they would chop it again. And the next year, there was so much energy and so much nutrients that was in this little knotty thing that it would finally explore and take off. And when the branches came out, they were strong enough to hold the fruit. Because otherwise, the branches, even if the fruit was good, the branches would have drooped onto the ground and the fruit would not have been able to last. So, all of this to say that when you planted a vine in your house courtyard, you were saying, we're here to stay. We have been a people on the run. We have been a people displaced. We have been a people enslaved. Now we have a place that we are rooted. Very, very, very important. So this is the imagery that we get in this whole story. And then once the vines do begin to grow, even then, every other year, you chop things down all the way. And then they grow and they bear fruit. And then the next year, it's time for abiding again. There's a rhythm to it over and over again. It takes care. Okay, so here's our question. Why might Jesus be saying this simple statement? Well, I love two things at the beginning, and one of those things is that Jesus begins with this statement that says that I'm the vine, okay? And there we go. I'm putting my artwork to the test. So here's a vine, but what's really cool is the first thing he says is, I'm the true vine and my Father. So here's another character, and my Father... Here's a little shovel. Okay, my Father is the gardener, okay? So Jesus says, I am linked to my Father. He's the one who plants me. He's the one that tends. So for those that don't know, my mom's a professional artist, and she's here. the apple, oh boy. I'm not going to finish that sentence. So anyway, so the first thing he says is, I am the vine, and my Father's the gardener. So he links himself here to the Father who plants and who creates all of this growth and who knows where and how to plant things. And then he says, and the next statement is he says, I am the vine, and you are the branches. Okay? And so the next thing that we get is this image of Jesus linking himself to his disciples. So Jesus literally places himself as the connection between the gardener and the fruit that is eventually given. So this is really, really crucial and important because of messianic understandings at the time of who will be this one that will come and bring the fulfillment of God's people, of what we've always longed for. Probably it's going to be violent military revolution, but we don't know. That's what we're expecting. And Jesus comes and he says, well, I'm the vine and you're the branches. So there's a connection to the Father that you might never have even realized is going to be possible through me. But that the life that flows through me to you is cultivated between the Father and me. And it's a really, really important thing that we're intended to see, and you'll see why in a minute. Okay, so why is Jesus, and what is Jesus saying in this statement? I want to suggest that he's talking about three simple things when he's talking about the vine and him being the vine. I think the first thing he's talking about is rootedness for his people. The vine represented, like I just said, that God had rooted people in the promised land. He planted the vine, he transplanted the vine. Okay, but now the vine was celebrated because it was a symbol of being rooted in the promised land. But the true promised land isn't a slab of Israeli soil. The true source of rescue wasn't being taken from Egyptian slavery. Not the ultimate rescue. The true inheritance for God's people is represented in Jesus himself. It's life with God. That's the promise. The vine was a reminder that someone was safe and in a rich land. 1 Kings 4:25. During Solomon's lifetime, Judah and Israel from Dan to Beersheba, they lived in safety, everyone under their own vine and their own fig tree. Having your own vine meant that you were living a safe life. And if you like the musical Hamilton, you'll recognize that phrase. Because George Washington sings it as he retires. He wants to sit under his own vine and fig tree. You know that song? Sorry, there's probably three other people that love that musical. Okay, so anyways, this is the image that we get. Having a vine meant that you were safe. So the image that Jesus says, I am the true vine. I am the promised land. I am the representation of your rescue from slavery. I am your safety. It's not the promised land. It's the presence of God. This is the promise. This is the new promise, right? I will be with you always. The kingdom of God is near. This is the inheritance. Jesus becomes the symbol of God's faithfulness to us. And it's not the things that Jesus does for us. It's Jesus himself. And that's so important. I am the life. I will be with you. Nothing can separate us from the love of God that is in Christ, Paul says. It is finished, Jesus declares. These are all symbols of what the inheritance for us actually is and how it changes us to know that there is absolutely nothing in our lives that can pull us away from the rootedness of Jesus and the love of God, okay? Which brings us then to kind of another thing that I think Jesus is saying, and that's that I think that in addition to rootedness, Jesus is talking about patient discipleship. One of the most influential people in my life in terms of their writing is Eugene Peterson and his pastoral books and his pastoral writing, and he wrote a book about discipleship, and he titled it A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. In order to live life on the vine, in order to actually bear fruit in a meaningful way, there is a rhythm of pruning and rest and growth and pruning and rest and growth that comes over and over and over again. Growth in our lives requires massive amounts of both patience and pruning, of letting God work on us and in us. You know, like if you could define what does it mean to be transformed by Jesus? It means that God's working on us and in us. He's changing our hearts, but he's also learning how to work on us and change the things that we do so that they are for the glory of God. The things that we say yes and the things that we say no to. What that means, see, bearing fruit, it's not just that the being enables the doing. I hear that phrase a lot, and that's really important. And that's usually what people draw from this story. Being with God enables the doing for God. But and there's so much truth in that, but the being is the doing. The remaining is the doing, because when you remain connected to Jesus in the deep places in your heart, what emerges, at least biblically, what we're talking about is if it's fruit, the type of fruit we're told in Galatians 5 in Paul's writing is the fruit of the Spirit that emerges from us. Think about it. Love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness, gentleness and faithfulness and self-control. How many of those things aren't just, they're all personal transformations, but how many of them benefit other people? Think about it. Think about that list. Gentleness, that's only how we relate to others. Kindness, goodness. See, this, the fruit that is formed with us from being becomes the doing in the world. Who we are is what we do. It's not just that who we are helps us do stuff, but who we are becomes what we do. The impact that we have on people is directly related to how transformed we are in the inner places. And because it starts internally and not by following rules, it's a fruit that will last. Fruit that will last a lifetime. Remain in me, Jesus says. I love this little story in Acts when Peter and John are before the Sanhedrin because they've been teaching and getting in trouble. And the Sanhedrin is looking at them, and they've called them in multiple times, but they've had trouble pinning them down. It says, when they saw the courage of Peter and John and realized that they were unschooled, ordinary men, they were astonished, and they took note that these men had been taught by Jesus. That's not what it says. It doesn't say they've been taught by Jesus. That's what you would expect, because what they were doing was teaching. But it's all about the courage. What they were impressed by and astonished by was the courage that they had, and they realized that they had been with Jesus, that they had been hanging out with Jesus, and Jesus had rubbed off on them. It wasn't that they knew the information that Jesus had taught them. They did that too. But what was so astonishing was they were so courageous, and it looked like Jesus, because they had remained with Jesus for long enough for it to just emerge from their lives as a natural expression. Patient discipleship is what we have to learn. We're so quick to want to see everything change in our lives and in the world. And sometimes we need to understand that we have to do the hard work of letting God prune us, transform us, do the daily routines that lead us to actually trusting Jesus, that we give ourselves grace and space as we go through that journey. And the last thing I think that Jesus is talking about maybe is, I think Jesus, when he says, I am the vine, I think he's talking about empty religion. And what I mean by that is that one thing I didn't mention when I told you about that gate is that when people donated large amounts of money to the temple, in the latter years, their names became engraved on the gold leaves. I don't think there's any parallel there. Big donors get their names engraved on the golden leaves. I've never heard that before, but it seems like it must have been a practice at this point. But anyways, what we get, I mean, this is one of the ancient historians says, often those who gave generously to the temple had their names inscribed on the golden leaves. This was a custom that all were familiar with in Jerusalem. Check this out. Essentially, they became attached to the vine. Their names became attached to the vine if they gave enough money. And so just play with me here with the idea that Jesus is walking past the temple where they know the vine is. Even if he wasn't walking past that, everybody knew that there was this representation at the entrance of the temple. And Jesus says, you know, I'm the true vine. Stay connected to me, and you'll bear fruit that's going to last. Put your identity not on golden leaves on a temple, but on the person that's in front of you, and I'll lead you to goodness and love of the Father and to fullness of life. Jesus says, don't put your names on something hanging on the temple. Don't link yourselves to Israel's faithfulness, which was never that great. Don't link yourselves to the sacrificial system represented by the temple, or to organized religion, or to the many good rules and regulations that earned you respect and righteousness. No, come to me. I'm God's promise. There are so many levels of importance in that as we explore that Jesus truly did intend to shut down the dominant religion and its attitudes and to fill that gap with himself as the new temple, the new place of forgiveness and worship, the access to the Spirit of God. There's so much there. Jesus says, if you offer what you've got, not to a golden statue, but to me, real life will happen. actual fruit. And maybe that's why at the end of this little section, he talks about joy. Because in empty religion, there is very little joy. Sometimes you can get momentary peace because you've appeased God. But there's little joy. And Jesus says at the end of this section, I have told you all these things, told you to remain, so that my joy might be in you and that your joy might be complete. I love the idea of joy. So maybe what he's really talking about there is joy and accessing joy. Joy is the reason that we remain, not because we should. We don't stay connected with Jesus primarily because we are supposed to. Okay, there is so much obligation in our lives and in our faith sometimes. This idea, when our identity is completely tied up with Jesus, when we know who we are, his joy of being with the Father becomes shared with us. Jesus, in John 17, Jesus is so overwhelmed with how much joy he has from the Father. And he says, I want to share these things with you so that my joy might be in you in the same way that I'm in the Father. I want you to be in me. So there's this idea of the joy of God, Jesus being the channel through it. When we know who we are, we can walk through dark times and not question our worth. When we know who we are, we can forgive even when it's not reciprocated. When we know who we are, we can refuse to do violence even when violence is done to us. When we know who we are, we can give our lives on behalf of those in need and those who are brokenhearted. When we know who we are, we can keep walking even in the midst of anxiety and fear. When our identity is tied up in Jesus, we can share our things. We can pray with boldness. We can reach out without being paralyzed by rejection. We can do anything because the chlorophyll that flows through Jesus flows through us too. That's the beauty of this image. So we can live and love and do all that God intended because we're the branches of the Jesus vine. So there's joy that comes when we express that connectedness. The reality, you know, friends, is that this doesn't come quick and easy, but it's available. And sometimes I think we've just given kind of in to the easier realities, the less beautiful realities, just because they're easier. So here's just an aside. Not really. It's directly connected. Meal communities begin today, officially, for our fall here. And sometimes I hear from people a sense of kind of quiet obligation or even reluctance, as if it's something that maybe people should do, but just don't. Friends, we're doing this for joy. I just want to be really clear. We are sharing in community for joy, to be known, to be with others, to have someone that's in your court each week actually praying and encouraging you and that you can pray and encourage, to give a chance to express all those one another's that Jesus exampled for us and that Paul taught us to live out so that our joy might be complete. It's for the joy and the goodness and the love that we do all of this stuff. I don't give a rip about successful church programs. We've all seen plenty of those. What I want to see is a life that emerges because people are learning how to share together the way of Jesus so that they learn what connectedness looks like and what fruit that lasts looks like. It's so beautiful. It's been said that this way of Jewish vineyard tending, when they do it right, what ends up happening is the branches are so strong when they're connected to the vine and pruned correctly that these huge clusters of grapes, they can last for months and months on the vine, fresh. You know, like apple trees, you've got like 2 weeks, right, before they start to rot or fall off. But the Jewish vineyards, they can last for months. Fruit that lasts, I believe, is how the scriptures put it. When we remain rooted to Jesus, but also the body of Christ in really true ways. So the whole story is about the simple priority of Jesus being the source of who we are and what we do. His job is bringing life, the life flow. Our job is simple connection. So our world's flipping upside down all the time. Nothing's rooted. Nothing's rooted. Nothing's patient. There's so much obligation. There's very little joy. It feels like we have to manufacture it sometimes. So I just want to encourage you. That's what we get to celebrate, even in the honesty of the challenge of diving into the waters of baptism with Jesus, knowing that there's a process of transformation that sometimes hurts when we're getting pruned. But don't forget the joy. Don't forget that the purpose is that the joy of Jesus gets to be in you. So declare our identity, friends, without fear or doubt of whose we are. draw deep of the well of God's love and spirit and grace that you have because you are a branch from the Jesus vine. And let it become difficult to figure out where you end and Jesus begins in you, because the same DNA is flowing through you both. That's what we celebrate. That's what we're invited to do every single day. It's a lifelong journey, and it's one that Jesus invites us into so that he can share his joy with us. May we and you remain in him so that you can experience and express that joy to a disconnected world. Jesus, hold on to us as we hold on to you. Amen.